I'll always love you.
There's a little creepy house in a little creepy place. A little creepy town in a little creepy world. Little creepy girl with her little creepy face. Saying funny things that you have never heard. Do you know what it's all about? Are you brave enough?
Welcome everyone to Xena and Uber's podcast, aka XNU. My name is Cass and I will be your pod host. Also, welcome back to those of you who have been following this podcast so far. We're now up to episode number 51. This podcast show is for all the Xena and Uber subtext stories that are out there that have not been given a voice. So welcome everyone, welcome back to the 51st episode of XNU. As everyone knows, last week's episode, number 50, ta-da, was a major milestone for me. We had the XNU inaugural competition, and we do have a winner for that, which I will announce. But also, we have some good things going on in the show today. We've got a wonderful show going on, so let's get right into it, okay? First and foremost, we're going to start out with the winner of last week's show. So, drumroll, please. And the winner is Becky Summers of West Palm Beach, Florida. So congratulations to Becky. She had all the correct answers for the show. Now, I know there are a few of you out there who are wondering, or actually have emailed me saying, wow, these were hard competition questions. And, well, I told you last time that I wasn't going to make it easy, so there you go. Now, Becky's won a Bradford Exchange plate valued at over $55. It's Sweet Slumber, Love's Heavenly Messenger. I've got a picture on the blog spot showing the actual plate that she's won. So congratulations once again, Becky. Now, the competition question answers. Here are the following. I do have them on the blog spot as well so that you can go back to number 51 and read the question and then follow up with the answer. So the answers are, number one, Liz Friedman. Number two, Bacchus. Number three, Enemoy. Number four, approximately 1450 BC, but with new technology, it places it around 1627 BC and 1600 BC. Number five, Knossos. Number six, Henrik Schliemann. Number seven, Goddess Aphrodite, Greek mythology, and her heel. Number eight, oh my god, she's killed Kenny, that bitch, and Geronimo. Number nine, Seven. Number 10, The Bride with White Hair. Number 11, Corinth, Greece. And finally, number 12, The Feeling You've Heard This Bullshit Before. So those are the answers to the first inaugural XNU competition. I hope everyone at least took a crack at it. And even if you didn't send it in, it hopefully exercised some of that gray matter that we call a brain of ours. So, on with the show.
Come and get
me. All right. The song snippet you hear this week is from Ina in Germany, and it's called Curly Walking on Air. So thank you for that, Ina, and I hope you enjoy the music on it. Now, for the movie review this week, we actually have two movie reviews, but I'm only going to give one because I'll hold the next one up, the next week's show. This week's movie review. It comes in from Faye, and it's called Kissing Jessica Stein. And according to the review, which I have on the show notes as well, it says, Jessica Stein is a single, straight, successful journalist, part of a bonded Jewish family living in New York City, who find herself not as straight as she thought when Jessica meets and begins an intense friendship with career woman Helen Cooper, which ultimately leads to romance. Jessica Stein is a hard-to-please journalist artist who is constantly plagued by people trying to find the right one for her. When her ex-fiancé tells her she's too picky, she answers Helen Cooper's personal ad looking to make a friend, but gets more than she expects. Jessica doesn't think there is just one person out there for everyone because plenty of people are kissing Jessica Stein. So that's the movie review for this week. And now on to the book review for my book wench. Okay, in the book review, Wenchy Poo turned around and sent in The Killing Room by Jerry Hill. And I'll have a link on my show notes so that you can actually go and read the review. It says, Denver detective Jake McCoy was rehabbing at her cabin in the mountains, trying to reconcile the shooting death of a young boy. Psychologist Nicole Westbrook, an expert in domestic violence, is in those very same mountains, escaping from the horrors of her profession for a brief vacation. Nicole becomes lost when she leaves the well-marked hiking trail in search of hot springs, and she stumbles upon Jake, who is enjoying her own soak in remote springs. They exchange first names only, but after a few hours together, a physical attraction neither can explain engulfs them, leaving them as lovers, not strangers, when Nicole departs the following day. But when Jake returns to Denver, a murder investigation leads her to Nicole. Both are surprised that they are face to face with a stranger they thought they'd never see again. Nicole tries to remain the professional closet that she's been hiding in for so long, a place where out-cop Jake McCoy does not fit. And Jake, still trying to recover from the shooting that left her injured, does her best to distract herself from Nicole. It is soon evident that a serial killer is targeting Nicole's former patients. Try as they may, they cannot deny the physical attraction between them, even if it means compromising the investigation. But after all is said and done, the fact remains that Nicole and Jake live in two different worlds. Despite the physical attraction and the general tug of love, both women accept that when their case is over, they will go their separate ways. Jake retreats back to the mountains, and Nicole resumes her practice in earnest, both trying to forget the other, and both failing. So that's from Wenchy Poo regarding this week's book review. And now for a recap of last week's show, and then into the show. When we left Xena and Gabrielle last, Xena was answering Gabrielle's question of when and why she became known as a conqueror versus a lion of Amphipolis as she used to be. Xena explained while reminiscing that she was on board of her ship, the Klinoki, and was encountered a Roman prisoner there who attracted her attention due to his air of arrogance and confidence. She also encountered a stowaway slave who ultimately showed her the pinch move she now knows. After sending word for Romans for a ransom for the prisoner known as Caesar, she became a bit infatuated with this man and his mannerisms, and eventually bedded him and made a proposal of being a team. On the beach where she released him after receiving her ransom, he made a promise to find her. Later aboard the ship, Ares confronted Xena and told her to get her priorities in order, and he expected an oath of fealty to him. He then issued a threat to Xena to not cross him and disappeared. Finally, after a while, Caesar was back on another ship bound towards them. The stowaway slave girl, who was now considered a friend, attempted to dissuade Xena meeting Caesar, but the lovesick fool Xena that she was now fell straight into his trap. He ambushed her and took control of the ship, killing all her men in the process. They couldn't find the stowaway, and Xena lied, saying she had killed her for her betrayal. He crucified her as a message to all those who dare oppose him, and as another measure, he broke her legs. After days of what she thought were days, the stowaway girl came back and cut her down. They traveled to a small cabin, and a man who was there helped Melila, who was the stowaway girl's name, fix her legs and set them. Now that she knew that what Melila's name was, she found out that she had saved her because it was not her time. With a strange skill of inserting long, thin needles into her body, Xena began to recuperate. And one day, while sitting down to talk with Melila, Caesar's men found them again, and an arrow that was intended to kill Xena instead killed Melila as she blocked Xena with her body. It was then that the beast made its first appearance, and that was the beginning of the end, so to speak. So that's where we left off, and we continue on. The Conqueror series, Tale 3, Time's Fell Hand by the late L.J. Moss. Chapter 6, To Think of Time, of All That Retrospection.
I had no idea, Gabrielle said the words almost reverently.
Her soft voice was enough to pull me from my memories of the past.
When I opened up my eyes and looked up, Gabrielle was staring straight ahead. I couldn't tell what she was thinking, but I did recognize that expression. I saw the same look on her face when she had confronted Ares on my behalf. I remember being amazed at this time that a young woman, whose own life had been like an extended trip through Tartarus, could summon no anger for her own life's injustice, but she had been willing me to face down a god for mine. "Gabrielle?" I finally asked. Her jaw tightened, but I received no reaction from her that she heard me speak. "Gabrielle, are you all right?" I sat up and her eyes finally focused on me.
"How could he?"
"Which he? Who?"
"Who? Julius Caesar! Zena, what he did? Why are you smiling at me like that?"
She abruptly stopped to ask. I hadn't meant to look amused. In truth, it wasn't so much amusement as happiness. Even with all the emotions of betrayal and physical pain that still swirled around me from the tale I had told Gabrielle, I felt the oddest sort of pleasant sensation. My heart was near to bursting, and I felt as how I imagined a schoolgirl would, falling in love for the first time. I suppose it was inappropriate, since we had been serious only moments before. Gabrielle sat there, upright and rigid, full of all the righteous indignation her heart could muster. Her eyes spat green fire, and her cheeks were flushed pink. All I could manage to think was, all for me. I felt all of this because of a wrong someone had done to me. Sweet Athena, was there a more loving mate in the entire known world? And could there have possibly been a more perfect example of redemption for a blackened soul than me having Gabrielle in my life?
"Well, what are you grinning at?"
She stared at me until I did burst into laughter. "Little one, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to ridicule at you. It's just that..."
"What?"
she asked, looking a little insulted. "Gabrielle, I want you to know how honored and loved I feel by your anger." I pulled her into my arms and squeezed her tight. I felt her relax slightly, and she looked up at me wearing a rather confused expression. "It's just that, well, while your anger certainly isn't misplaced, yes, Caesar was an evil bastard. Think about it a moment. You're mentally disemboweling a man who has already been dead for over 10 seasons. There seemed to be some moments of silence, and, at first, I thought that perhaps Gabrielle was angry with me. Perhaps I should have simply have been gracious at her gesture. My fear grew until she pushed away from me in small ways. When she looked up at me, I breathed an enormous sigh of relief. Gabrielle's face had that innocent, sheepish expression that I find so endearing.
"Oh," she eventually responded. "I knew that, of course."
Finally, she chuckled aloud with me.
"I suppose I do lose my mind when I think of anyone hurting you. It didn't seem to matter that it happened ages ago."
I raised an eyebrow and put on an offended expression.
"Well, I wouldn't say ages."
We laughed and snuggled together under the blankets. I pressed my chest against her back and wrapped my arms around a small frame.
"Each time you tell me a story about your past, I realize that circumstances affected your life to make you the person you are, just as they did me,"
Gabrielle said.
"I think that it's odd that a woman as powerful as you and a slave should have so much in common."
"I guess it proves that we're not born to be any certain way. Most of the way we act now has to do with everything that happened to us in life. Those experiences actually shape us, you know. I never like to talk much, especially about myself. I'm finding it a bit easier to do. Well, to you, anyway." I didn't have the nerve to admit that I worried about opening up completely to Gabrielle. I feared that one day I would reveal too much, and it would be too terrible for Gabrielle to accept. She hadn't yet given me any indication that she might ever do so, but it seemed to plague my mind just the same. Perhaps it was only my insecurity speaking.
"How long before we get to Athens?"
Gabrielle asked in a sleepy voice.
I'm not sure. It depends on what kind of time we make with the wagons. I think I'll talk to Atreus in the morning and see how we're keeping pace." Gabrielle didn't move, and I realized the long day had finally gotten the best of her. I kissed her neck and moved into a more comfortable position. It wasn't very long before I succumbed to my own weariness and joined her in the realm of Morpheus.
"Gods above!"
Gabrielle groaned as I helped her into the saddle the next day. She was as sore as I thought she might be. I opened my mouth to tell her so, but she abruptly stopped me.
"Cena, if you say I told you so, I swear."
"Would I do that?" I tried to look innocent. I definitely had to work on that expression.
"Okay, what were you going to say?"
"Say?"
"Yes. What were you going to say that wasn't I told you so?"
I forget?" Gabrielle laughed out loud, and her peevish mood all but disappeared.
"You brighten my day, my conqueror. You definitely brighten my day."
"I try," I said with a wide smile as I mounted to Noria. We walked again near mid-morning, both of us leading our horses. I tried to prepare Gabrielle for what it would be like to enter Athens. "We'll stop and camp about a day outside Athens. That will give us a chance to send soldiers ahead for us to prepare."
"Prepare?"
Gabrielle asked. "Gabrielle, you do realize that we have to ride into Athens."
"I rather thought that's how we would get there."
I smiled at her misunderstanding. "I mean a procession. The Athenians will expect the conqueror and her new queen to ride into Athens at the head of a military procession. Colorful banners, white doves, the works."
"Oh my,"
Gabrielle said softly. Finally, after some moments of silence, she looked over at me and nudged me in the shoulder.
"I expect it's a good thing I learned to ride, eh?"
We both laughed heartily. I think we would have found some alternative. But it will look good for you.
"You mean, I'll look good on horseback?"
"Well, that too. I mean in strength and power. Remember when we talked about the politics of you being queen of the empire?" I had spoken to Gabrielle of this soon after our marriage. She was not unfamiliar with the games people play where position and power are concerned. She had lived as a slave in a household where those games meant the difference between comfort and agony, pleasure or pain. In particular, we discussed Athens and the huge power struggles I had constantly with the city. They had felt second best from the start, since I had selected Corinth as the seat of the empire. The battle that had sealed my conquest of Greece had been the taking of Athens. It wasn't an easy battle. It was vicious and bloody. Aside from the harshness of the campaign, my own personal vendetta against the city caused me to nearly raise it to the ground. Pericles was Athens. He had made the mistake of standing against Amphipolis during the Peloponnesian War. I never forgave him for that. Of course, there was also the aristocracy that Pericles promoted and perpetuated. I did two things upon entering a burning Athens on that cold winter morning after I defeated him. I had Pericles crucified, and I killed most of the members of the aristocracy. The aristocracy had been a small circle of noble families. They had all the wealth and power, monopolized the government, and held all the judiciary positions. It was a tight little circle, and they were loath to give it up. Funny what a hurry they had been in to beg for democracy once they saw Pericles' body hanging there. The lower citizens paid all the taxes, served in the military, and essentially obeyed all the directives of their noble-born superiors. It's true, all of the empire was a monarchy, but I liked the idea of listening to the people, as long as it didn't get out of hand. I put an intelligent man named Cleisthenes in charge. I regretted destroying so much of the city during my assault, but I was confident that this young man would help to restore the city, even surpassing its previous glory. By the time I left Athens, headed towards Corinth, they had already begun to replace the wood limestone temples atop the Acropolis with structures made of marble. He presented me with his ideas for reform that, while not a democracy, still gave the general populace a say in their city and their lives. Since I was settled in Corinth, it made sense to try their form of government. He divided the population of Athens into 10 tribes. Each tribe elected a general who spoke for them. Although the generals were under my ultimate command, it looked to the people as though they governed themselves. Thus the Athenians looked on me, not as the conqueror who had defeated them, but as the warrior who liberated them from the aristocracy's tyranny.
So, I have to impress them. Is that what you're saying?
Gabriel asked. Just be yourself, love. That's impressive enough. Remember, Gabriel, that once we get to Athens, well, it's still a city full of ex-noble families who love to start trouble. Don't trust anyone completely.
Ride into the city, impress them, but don't trust them. So far, I think I can handle it.
She turned and winked at me, and I knew in that instant that Gabrielle would be able to handle anything they might throw at her. How I was to know that we would actually be faced with a situation that would put both our skills to the test. As we neared our midday break, Gabrielle caught me unaware on her next statement.
Sina, I would like to have your permission to learn how to use a weapon.
She surprised me with her request, in part because I hadn't thought Gabrielle ever entertained the notion of honing her warrior side. Her asking such a thing in the first place baffled me. Was she still unaware that my life was for her? There's nothing that she could desire, nothing she might ask for that I would deny her. Of course, she was unaware, you old fool. I had still been unable to gather the nerve to voice all my emotions to her. Little one, you know you don't have to ask for my permission. You are your own woman.
Even though I'm your queen, you are still my lord. You rule the empire, and it's only fitting that even my actions should come under your authority.
I glanced over to her just to be certain she wasn't having a bit of fun with me. She looked straight ahead, and I realized that she was well and truly serious. Gabrielle, of all people, understood protocol. I had no fear that she would ever slip up in front of anyone else. Her life as a slave made her very aware of the proper behavior in chain of command. Very well, I chuckled. What sort of weapon did you have in mind? Were I so inclined to give this permission?
Oh, well, I hadn't really thought that far ahead. That's your area of expertise. What sort of weapon do you think I'd be suited for?
I thought quickly. Gabrielle was a master at hand-to-hand combat. She was small, but amazingly quick. With the skills taught to her by Yupan, she had the agility and strength to use a larger opponent's size against them. Well, given your skills and size, how about a staff?
A staff?
A staff. You know, like the one you've seen Effany with?
Oh, the big stick.
I laughed at her terminology. Right, the big stick.
I don't know, Zena. It's so big. Where would I put it when I wasn't using it? I'd look pretty silly carrying it around all the time as we trapeze all over the countryside.
Point taken.
Besides, that ugly carved bird on the top of Effany's staff scares the Tartarus out of me.
All right, I chuckled. Something else then. I went through a mental list of weapons I thought might match her skills. She appeared to have a reason why none of them was suitable. Size, I asked at last. We had come to the short weapons that could be easily used effectively by someone skilled in hand combat. I explained what they looked like and how they were used.
Yes, I remember seeing something like that in Chin. They used them to move hay and for other farm work,
Gabrielle said.
I think I might feel a little foolish carrying on a farm tool.
That's the one, but they're far from farm tools. Ours are made of steel with sharp pointy tips as opposed to the rounded ones you're familiar with.
I don't know. It sounds awfully lethal.
I stopped walking and turned to her. That is the sort of the point of a weapon, love. It's supposed to be lethal. Otherwise, what's the point?
I understand what you're saying, Zena, but I don't think I like something quite as lethal. A blade of any kind could be so final. I shudder to think what could happen in an accident.
I sighed inwardly. Okay, no size.
Maybe I should rethink the big stick. Do you think Effany might give me a few lessons?
I think she would be happy to comply, but under one condition.
Which is?
You promise not to call it a big stick in her presence.
Oh, very funny.
She slapped me on the arm. Hey, you hit me, I responded.
I'm sure it won't be the last time I conquer,
she quipped. Gabrielle surprised me with her actions and her light banner. I had never been happier. The young girl who had been afraid to meet my eyes when we first came to know one another was nowhere in sight. This was an independent woman before me, no longer a cowering slave. I just couldn't resist removing that smirk of hers, though. I leaned down close to one ear and whispered in my most seductive voice, "Maybe next time you could tie me up before you hit me. Just imagine me tied up and naked before you. Which do you prefer? Riding crop? Whip?" I pictured with pure enjoyment as my seasoned young queen's cheeks flushed with a beautiful scarlet. Pure wonderment filled me as I thought of Gabrielle's embarrassment, that a young woman, so experienced in sensual pleasure, could find it in her to blush at my comments. Well, it always caused me to thank Athena. I was feeling rather full of myself as I straightened back up. Being Gabrielle, however, I should have known that the girl would never let anyone get the better of her if she could help it. I wasn't prepared for what happened next.
"Tie you up? What makes you think you should be the one to have all the fun?"
Gabrielle slid her hand down my backside as she spoke and punctuated her remark with a slap that suddenly drew every drop of blood in my body to my suddenly aching groin. She kept walking, a spring in her step that spoke volumes. As for me, all that focus on that space between my legs was making it particularly difficult to walk. Then there was that visual that kept me flittering before my mind's eye. The one of me, naked, restrained, Gabrielle looking over me. Well, you get the picture.
"Ready to ride again?"
Gabrielle turned back to ask. "No!" I nearly shouted. There was no way in Hades I'd be able to mount a horse just then. She was smiling at me now, realizing my discomfort.
"Mercy!"
I grinned as I slowly limped up to where she stood. "Chubbos!" I straightened tall as the thought occurred to me. I wasn't certain what clubs had to do with anything at the moment, but there you are.
"What?"
Gabrielle wore a confused expression. Once I explained that the wooden clubs were a much-used Amazon weapon, Gabrielle seemed intrigued. We took our midday break, though she was too excited to relax. She went to Ephany, since I had told her that the best Chubbos users had ever seen were the Amazons. After two candle marks had passed, I went in search of Gabrielle. I needn't have been worried. I found her, well protected, by our own personal guard as well as the Royal Amazon Guard. Ephany sat upon the grass, watching Gabrielle in the middle of a makeshift ring. My wife was receiving instruction on using the Chobos from an Amazon I was unfamiliar with. "I told her to talk to you about it, but I'd think you'd have her using them the first day," I said as I sat down beside Ephany.
"She has an affinity for the clubs. Besides, I take orders from her, not the other way around."
"Point taken. Do you trust the warrior she's with?"
"With my life," Ephany responded. "That's Eponin, our tribe's weapons master. She's about 10 seasons younger than I am. There's no one better for the queen to learn from, except perhaps me or you."
She gave me a sidelong glance.
"Rumor says that you are quite skilled, young thing with a pair of chobos. I believe they say you learned from Cyan herself."
I flinched at the sound of Cyan's name. It was true. She had told me everything there was to know about being an Amazon, and I repaid her by murdering her. I shook my head to dispel the dark memories, when I looked up with an expression filled with regret and pain. Ephany was watching me. She looked away and sighed deeply.
"The past is a harsh mistress, Conqueror. Just when we think we've given her all that we have to give, she comes along and demands more. We cannot refuse her, though. She owns us, and we know it."
There are those of us who'd cringe at her demands. I rubbed my hand across my jaw. I wish I could forget. I wish it never happened in the first place.
"Then that's a start, my friend."
I looked up quickly. Bethany was already concentrating on the scene before her. Had she just called me her friend? I just sat there, stunned. How to express what I felt at the moment. You see, I'd never had a friend before. Of course there was Atreus and Delia, but their association with me had been forced from the start. They had each known me many seasons, and eventually we became friends. This, however, was very different. Here was someone that I didn't really know at all well, someone who could simply tolerate or ignore me if she wished. Instead, she chose the path of friendship. It confused and elated me at the same time. Gabrielle doesn't know. Or at least I don't think she knows, I said. I suppose the Amazon scrolls have more in them about that time than my own library's works.
Some things should only be revealed in their time.
She turned to look at me again. She won't hear it from us. It turned out that Gabrielle did indeed have a talent for the chobos. Each morning, after her Kijong routine, she went to study with Eponin. She did the same at midday. I would watch, offer encouragement, and at the odd instruction. But as with everything Gabrielle set her mind to, she soon became quite passable. The Amazons were extremely decent to Solon also. It seems as though word had silently spread through the caravan grapevine. The one had asked me directly, nor Solon to my knowledge. They must have heard him call me mother at some point. It still came as a surprise, given how most of the Amazons still felt about our centaur friends. I would swear, however, that I saw Effany speaking with one of the centaurs around twilight that evening. It didn't seem like an official chat from my vantage point. It looked very much like they were laughing. Solon had expressed a desire to learn of the Amazon culture. My son, the inquisitive one. I was certain Yupan welcomed the reprieve. Solon followed the old man around like a puppy most of the day, always asking questions about Chin, the people, the language. He was slowly learning. I heard him attempt to exchange a few words with Gabrielle in the regional dialect used in the area that Gabrielle had lived in. She looked at him oddly, and then smiled. She quietly took him aside, and said that the mispronunciation of one word had taken his inquiry as to her health, and turned it into, "You will die today." As I said, he was learning. Slowly. We found a few willing Amazons to assist him in his quest for knowledge. I didn't even want to think about what else they would probably teach a young man when the sun went down. I even saw Yupan and Eponid speaking together, discussing fighting techniques with particular weapons. That was one Amazon who certainly didn't act like any of her sisters. She spent most of her time tongue-tied or tripping over her own feet, with the exception of the time she spent with a weapon in her hand. When she was sparring, she was as graceful as a bird in flight. When I presented myself to speak with her regarding Gabrielle's lessons, she muttered and stuttered, backing up so fast that she tripped over herself. Whatever Eponin's problems were, it appeared that Gabrielle had the power to still them in some degree. Eponin lost her nervousness demeanor around Gabrielle. The Amazon was actually able to walk and talk at the same time. They laughed and joked like schoolgirls most of the time. It felt good to see Gabrielle develop a friendship with someone rather close to her own age. It may have seemed odd to some, but it appeared that our caravan was becoming a closer-knit group without anyone really trying.
What did you do after, Xena?
We had been relaxing in our tent, waiting for the generals of Athens to come out and greet us. The sun was already high in the sky, but we hadn't made plans to enter Athens until morning anyway. It was apparent we were close to the city, as the smells wafted out into the countryside to greet us. After what, little one?
I questioned absently. I had been reading some maps of the region, planning our next stop at Delphi.
After Caesar's bench found you. Is that when you went to Chin?
After.
It had been a long time since I thought about that time. Did I remember everything that happened to me so long ago? Boreas, Alti, the Amazons. Gods, the Amazons. I still hadn't told Gabrielle about them. How could I tell the Queen of the Amazons what I had done to her adopted people back then?
Ares gave you a second chance, then?
Gabrielle asked. Her question finally drew me from my introspection. A second chance? I suppose you could put it that way. He tried to beat the crap out of me. I gave as good as I got, though. I finished with a smirk, remembering that fight.
You beat up the god of war?
Well, that's being a little generous. Let's just say I held my own against Ares.
Still, Xena, he's a god. Didn't he have powers? I know you're a spectacular warrior, but he's...
Ares had a weakness back then that not many people knew about.
Which was?
Gabrielle asked. Me, I answered. See, Ares had a sort of no-win situation going on where I was concerned. He knew that the only threat of physical power might kept me in line. But he also knew that if he ever used any of that power against me, that I would walk. That was why he treated me with a velvet glove most of the time. The interesting part was that when he didn't use any godlike powers, he and I were very evenly matched.
So what happened? Did he take it well, the fact that you were able to match him?
No, not one little bit. He finally lost his temper, zapped me with one of those power bolts he liked to throw around. It broke my leg, in nearly the same place that I had it broken by Caesar's man when I was on the cross. Ares walked away after he told me that I could drag myself back to Niglio's cabin, since I liked him so much. I didn't see Ares for at least another 5 seasons after that. My leg didn't heal properly, so I walked with a limp until the time I told you about in Chin, when Lao Ma healed it.
A lot happened in between. I read of some, but that really only touches the surface, doesn't it?
Gabrielle asked from a reclining position on a low-lying couch.
I feel like those seasons lasted for an eternity. That short time, I was at my worst. There's always been one Xena that was even more cruel than the Conqueror could ever be. She was destroyer of nations.
I read a little of that shamaness. What was her name?
Gabrielle asked.
Alti. I answered flatly. Wasn't sure how much longer I could continue with these memories. I was feeling a little nauseous, reliving a part of my life that time that cruelly left intact with my mind. It made me wonder why Athena never took me up on my offer to purge that period in history from my mind. She had something about being condemned to relive the past if I tried hard to forget it. I still didn't understand exactly what she meant by that. Gabrielle jerked herself into an upright position from the couch.
Had you told Ares that Caesar had done to you?
What do you mean? She had switched the momentum of the conversation so quickly that it confused me.
You once told me that you made a constant effort to keep Ares out of your mind, right?
Right, I drawled out. I hate when gods read my mind. It's just a little technique I picked up from an old man in Amphipolis. He taught me the way, and he gave me some lessons on how to scramble my thoughts in the presence of a god. At the time, I never thought I'd ever have to use it. Gabrielle kept looking at me as though I was missing the most obvious point. In truth, it turned out that I was.
It strikes me as odd that Ares told you to go back to Niglia. How did he know you'd been there in the first place?
I opened my mouth to speak, but found myself without the words to say. How had he known? More importantly, why had I never come to this conclusion?
I suppose it's all moot now. Athena and Artemis both have told us that Zeus has Ares put away for the rest of our lifetimes. I know that doesn't take away any of the hurt he caused you.
I looked over at the compassionate woman, who held only love and devotion with her emerald gaze. How quickly she was to focus in on only me. Mine weren't the only hurts, love. Ares set your life's path along an alternate line that could have ended in your death. As it was, he caused you more pain than most have had to endure in their entire lifetime. She rose and quickly ended in my lap, placing arms around my neck. She softly kissed me.
Do you want to know the funny thing? Ever since I met you, my Conqueror, I feel as though I'm living a life in a different lifetime. Well, I know I am living a different life, but it's like all that old pain, those old memories have disappeared. Does that sound crazy?
No, little one. It sounds wonderful. I didn't tell her how much I envied her at that moment. For my past to disappear, it was more than I could ever hope for.
Chapter 7. Flower in the Crannied Wall.
Lord Conqueror, you look well.
As do you, Clonestes. How fare the Athens? I could see that he was staring at me, perhaps a little too intently. I wanted to laugh aloud, knowing that he was thinking a woman of my age should be, well, her age. It seems as though Athena had put time in reverse for me to a certain point. Anyway, the physical indications were far less than the inner signs. I felt half my age, and whether it was due to having Gabrielle in my life or Athena's touch, either way I considered it a gift.
Extraordinarily well, Lord Conqueror.
It was a stiff and formal reception that I received from the generals and the polemarchos, or war leader. I recognized the views of the generals from the Athenian campaign so long ago. Themistocles, Aristides, and Stesilaus were all excellent soldiers, getting a little long in the tooth, but weren't we all? Miltiades was the polemarchos. I had issues with the man because he had served with the Persian king Darius before I conquered Athens. Miltiades pledged his allegiance to me before I swept into Athens, however, and that had saved him. He was simply too good a warrior to execute, and he proved his loyalty throughout the years. After all these seasons, it was still Miltiades, old tie to the Persians, that fueled my suspicion. He allied with the enemy once. What was to keep him from doing it a second time? When I shook Callisthenes' hand and offered him a friendly hug, they all looked as though I had lopped the hand's head off. I had changed much since I was last in Athens, nearly 5 seasons previous. I didn't take any notice of the general's reserved behavior. They didn't mean their actions as a personal affront to me. They were all warriors, and I would not have expected anything different from them. Callisthenes, however, had never reacted much to who I was or the abominable way I reacted. He seemed to take it all in stride. I remember I had been in a meeting with him once about restoring the great library. During my siege of the city, much of the building had been damaged, but quick-thinking citizens had relocated much of the parchments to the library's subterranean level to save them from destruction. During a pause in the conversation, I had ordered the execution of a man I considered a traitor to my throne. It was a gross overreaction, but I was prone to such behavior back then. Callisthenes never blinked an eye, even though I could see that my order affected him. He paled, swallowed once, and continued his presentation. Being a very young man at the time, he had impressed me with the control he had over his emotions. At that moment, Gabriel returned from a meeting with the Amazons. Ephany and 2 members of the Royal Amazon Guard stood with the young queen. We had nearly given up on receiving the generals as darkness drew near. Gabriel was dressed rather casually in her riding clothes, as was I. She wore her hair tied back on her neck, but looked every bit the queen in her leather togs. "Gentlemen, may I present my wife, Her Highness Queen Gabrielle," I said as Gabrielle came over to stand beside me. The generals made their perfunctory greetings, each in their turn. To their credit, they each dropped to one knee to acknowledge Gabrielle's royal status. Callisthenes stepped forward and kneeled respectfully before Gabrielle. He appeared a bit dazed, but it wasn't the first time Gabrielle had this effect on a man.
"So it's true, then,"
he said in a voice filled with awe. I looked between Gabrielle and her Amazon. Ephany glanced at me, and we each starched an eyebrow in question to his statement.
"True?"
Gabrielle asked as she looked around at all of us. Callisthenes paled slightly as he realized his rudeness.
"Forgive me, Your Highness. I meant no disrespect. It's simply that, well, all of Athens is talking about it."
"Talking about what?" I was quick to ask. If I had hackles, I was certain they would have been standing straight on end.
"Well, that you..."
He stammered and hesitated.
"Well, that you married a beautiful Amazon queen,"
Callisthenes explained all in one breath. I chuckled as I noticed the Amazon stood just a little taller.
"I admit,"
Callisthenes said as he shook Gabrielle's hands,
"I think the room has truly underestimated your beauty, however, if I may be so bold as to say."
He said this last to me, and I grinned like a hero who had just had a medal pinned to her chest. "You may indeed." Gabrielle flushed appropriately at the comment.
"It's a pleasure to meet all of you gentlemen. I can see why Athens stands so proud with a leader such as you. Miltiades, it's a privilege. I've read many of your war stratagems. I'd very much like to discuss some points with you if you have the time."
Miltiades inclined his head stiffly in Gabrielle's direction.
"You honor me, Your Highness."
He was civil in his tongue, but the pole marcher's expression said that discussing battle stratagem with a woman was the last thing in life he wanted to do. Hades, he used to grind his teeth when he took orders from me. He had an Athenian manner, to be sure. They had been the worst city in Greece when it came to the rights they gave women, especially their wives. A prostitute had actually been able to travel to more places, unattended, than a nobleman's wife could. Wives had no money, no status, and were often as much prisoner in their own homes as their slaves. My reign tried to change some of that, which made me no friends among the aristocracy left in Athens. I smiled to myself at the man's prediction. The only reason he obeyed me was probably because I could kick his ass from here to Corinth, and he knew it. As an afterthought, I realized that Gabrielle could probably kick his ass too. That hero's grin on my face grew larger.
"Callisthenes, I've heard wonderful things about your work. I'm especially interested in visiting your city library,"
Gabrielle continued with a greeting.
You appreciate the parchment, Your Highness."
"I do indeed," Gabrielle answered.
I knew the library and the schools would be high on Gabrielle's list of places to visit within the city. I wanted to be there when she walked through the library for the first time. The library in Corinth would seem minuscule in comparison.
Then I shall be at your disposal during your visit. Please allow me to show you anything our city has to offer.
Thank you. I shall definitely take you up on your gracious offer, Gabrielle responded.
I believe we should be on our way then,
Knisnes began.
I understand that you've taken your evening meal, and we have no wish to intrude further. Will you ride into the city tomorrow, Lord Conquer?
I think at mid-morning, I answered.
The citizens are quite excited over your arrival. Who should I speak to regarding the procession, Lord Conquer?
Atreus is my captain. I believe many of you remember him. He can make any arrangements and speak for me in these matters. Atreus? I called to my second-in-command. He stepped forward. Please see that Clinistes has what he needs in order to make the arrangements for tomorrow.
Aye, Lord Conqueror,
Atreus responded. If there is nothing else, I bid you good evening, gentlemen.
Aye, Conqueror,
they said in response. The morning began overcast, and I feared it would rain. Not a suspicious way for Gabrielle to ride into the city for her first time. By mid-morning, the skies cleared and the light breeze from the coast blew off any chance of poor weather. Now, I should go back and tell of a brief conversation that happened during our meal the previous evening. We had been invited, along with our friends and family, to the Amazon camp for dinner. The meal had gone exceedingly well, and we enjoyed the friendly conversation. Gabrielle and I sat across from one another, and Ephany sat beside Gabrielle. She had gloated over some of the seating arrangement, but what could I do? Their camp, their rules, so to speak. I wasn't in the mood to cause trouble about it, especially since I was beginning to enjoy this little game of one-upmanship Effie and I continued to play in regards to Gabrielle.
Can you believe the nerve, though?
I overheard Gabrielle telling Effie.
The man was more impressed that I was some Amazon queen than anything else.
Effie and I laughed at the same time.
Well, Gabrielle pouted slightly. I wonder what he'd think if he knew just how much Amazon experience I actually had.
So, Effie began. Why not give the people what they want?
What do you mean? I asked.
If they want to see her met, Gabrielle, as an Amazon, surrounded by her loyal Amazon warriors, then why not give them what they want? Besides, think how good you'll look, Conqueror. All those adoring citizens thinking you won the heart of an Amazon royalty.
Very amusing, I responded.
I saw the expression on Gabrielle's face, however. She looked over at me, and I saw the twinkle in her eye. She had the look that told me her brain was working up something devilish. She smiled at me then, and I knew I was caught.
Go on and do it then. What's another 30 or 40 Amazons in our procession? I said.
I spoke with Atreus and my officers before mounting Tenorio. Not only had the procession been planned like a military engagement, but safety had been an even greater concern. Atreus had already doubled the personal guard that would ride around Gabrielle and me. We traveled at 400 of the best of Corinth's army. It was an enormous amount of manpower to take on a holiday. We had women, children, and the very throne of the Empire in our caravan. I wished to take no chances with our safety. I mounted Tenorio, who had been waiting beside Gabrielle's mare.
Ready?
If I said no, could we do this another time? Maybe in, I don't know, a few seasons?
Athens will fall at your feet, my love. I meant that with all my heart. Gabrielle sat straight in her saddle, wearing her riding leathers and body armor. The bright gold coins that made up her armor glittered and cast the sun in 1,000 different directions. Epinet had showed her how to braid small beads into her golden locks, and on the horn of her saddle, Ephany had strategically placed the queen's mask. It was a frighteningly impressive mask, and I knew it would work as magic on the people of Athens.
Shall we ride?
I indicated with a wave of my hand that we were finally ready. It only took us a little over a candle mark to reach the city gates. Gabrielle and I were somewhere about 3/4 of the way back. We had a few surprises for the ride in, mostly entertainment for the crowd. In addition, there were Gabrielle's Amazons. The men were sent into the city in advance of our party, said that word had spread quickly of the Amazon Queen. The city streets were jammed, the people lined up 6 and 7 deep. The city had all but come to stop in hopes of catching a glimpse of the never-before-seen Amazons. I turned to see Gabrielle's hands tightening around her mount's reins. The white knuckles gave way her carefully concealed apprehension. I reached over and took her hand in mine. I leaned down slightly as I brought her hand to my lips, Turning her hand over, I gently kissed the open palm. I have waited my whole adult life to ride into a city where welcome waited for me on the other side of the gates. I never even dreamed that it would happen with a woman so incredibly wonderful as you was by my side. I waited for her to chuckle and make light of my declaration. I waited anxiously for her response. It was still difficult to make myself vulnerable and open to my heart, even to Gabrielle. When I let my heart speak, instead of my brain, I found myself saying things I actually felt. I feared that such openness came with a price, however. I should not have doubted. Gabrielle squeezed my hand and with her thumb caressed the back of my hand.
You always know exactly what to say to make me feel safe and loved.
It was a good thing that I was on horseback. She looked at me with an expression that melted my knees. Then she smiled that refreshingly open smile she has.
I love you, Zita.
She squeezed my hand once more. It always startled me to hear my given name. Even Gabrielle had given to call me the Conqueror most of the time, even though she used it more as a pet name than my title. To hear my name and her professional love in the same breath, I thought that at that moment I could have flown into Athens. I returned the sentiment. I love you, Gabrielle. The horns at the front of the procession told us that the front of a line had reached the gates. When an enormous chorus of voices all cheered at the same moment, I knew they had entered the city. It was like anything I heard in great many seasons. The first sounds to reach our ears had been cries of, "Lion! Lion!" I swallowed down the lump in my throat and actually struggled to hold back the tears that pushed their ways past my tightly held control. How time does change everything. 10 seasons ago, small children threw rocks at my party upon entering Athens. Old women spit on the ground and clutched their talismans around their neck when I rode by. They thought of me only as the conqueror, one-time destroyer of nations. To them, I was an abomination, a freak of nature, or perhaps a joke of the gods. Now my reputation may still have been tarnished, but it was no longer black as the pits of Tartarus. Some of the former self had begun to show through, and it was all because of the women by my side. I may have been begun to change before Gabrielle came into my life, but I would have been a lost soul, floundering without guidance had it not been for her light. I slowly made my way to her goodness and light as if it were Geekin set upon the rocks. Her soul steered me clear of the dangerous cliffs and towards the shore, to the promise of home. I could not see this particular display as we entered Athens, but I knew exactly what was happening. I had witnessed it 100 times before. I could see with my mind's eye as the soldiers of Corinth lined themselves six across. They wore bronze armor, polished to such a luster that it gleamed as would gold. The cavalry, about 24 men on horseback, preceded the infantry. The soldiers' parade tunics were deep purple with golden trim. They matched the banners that the front of the line men carried. On poles 17 hand high, the men steadily unfurled the deep wine-colored banners, bearing them as the head of the line. Before the cavalry and infantry, though, would come the archers. They were ordinary archers, but within their quivers sailed the most astonishing arrows. I could see the picture of the scene as the people cheered, rushing toward the front of the streets, jostling for position of which to view the spectacle. The archers would separate from the ranks and run forward. In unison, they would drop to one knee and fire their arrows high into the sky, directly over the crowd. I listened for the crowd's gasp to indicate the archers had let loose their arrows. I counted to 5, waited for the expected cheer to rise up from the crowd. I wasn't disappointed in either, from the sounds was a crowd. The reason for their amazed cries was because the arrows were actually brightly covered parchments, tightly rolled into the shapes of ordinary shafts. When the foe arrows were shot into the sky, the parchment quickly loosened, and the colorful streamers fell upon the delighted spectators. The city provided musicians, and soon, even from our distance, we could hear the reverberations of sounds beyond the gates. The soldiers before us advanced steadily, and we moved slowly behind them until Gabrielle and I could see the wide-open gates to Athens.
"I suppose this is it,"
Gabrielle looked over at me and said. Her voice betrayed the nervousness that her expression hid. I silently applauded her. "I'm beside you, little one. Just remember that."
"For always?"
She smiled at me, and I understood the reassurance she was asking for. "For always and then some, my love." It seemed to be exactly what she needed to hear, and I silently thanked Athena for giving me the words. Gabrielle's smile broadened, and she urged her mount forward.
"Then I guess we should smile and wave at the people."
I chuckled lightly. "Tell you what, you smile and wave, and I'll ride along and look like my usual menacing self.
You are a killjoy, my conqueror,
she said as she laughed. Then I am nothing if not predictable, I replied with a sly grin. Effany directed the Amazons to surround us in a semicircle in front with four lines of soldiers behind. The Amazon warriors, dressed in their skins and feathers, and outfitted with short swords, looked quite fearsome as they slipped their mask over their heads. The frightening hand-carved mask maintained the notion of their strength. It was our turn as we entered the gates of Athens. The crowd caught sight of the Amazons, and a collective gasp, along with assorted oohs and ahs, went up from the people. Then the people took the vision of Gabrielle and myself. A sort of hush fell upon the thousands of people lining the streets. Balconies were filled with overflowing people, crowded to the side streets. Young boys even hung from the olive trees. That one moment seemed to last forever as I prayed that whoever held a dislike for me would not take it out on Gabrielle. Just as suddenly, cheers exploded into the air. The sound was deafening as Gabrielle looked at me in complete surprise. I don't think either of us had been ready for the hero-like reception the people of Athens showed us with. I could barely hear the musicians, or even the sound of my own horse's hooves on the limestone streets. The applause and cheering followed us all the way up to the Acropolis. We had arranged earlier to end our procession on the steps of the Parthenon. Although it had been Pericles who had begun the work of the Acropolis, it had been my coffers that had actually finished the labor to make it one of the true glories of Greece. There were three contrasting temples and a most impressive gateway. They had recently begun the building of the Theater of Dionysus, and I had hopes of building an additional, even larger theater there. It was Athena's temple, for which I spared no expense. I had entrusted the sculptor, Philidias, who was supervising my new temple through Athena. I figured it was the least I could do, given that Athena herself had awarded me her city, and consequently, victory over Greece. Many questioned my decision to give Philidias a job. He was an artist, not an architect, but it was mostly as a reward for the incredible sculpture of Athena that he had created upon my commission. The Parthenos, an impressive statue that stood over 50 hands high, had been ornately covered in ivory and gold. It was also priceless, in my opinion, that I believed it deserved the house just as worthy. Philidias hired the architects, Kilocrates and Ichthyonos, to plan the marble structure. They used Phoenician marble found in the quarries of Mount Penteclicon in Attica. I was most impressed when I sat down with their plans and drawings. Instead of a building in the traditional sense with straight lines, they used curves. As I said, I was most impressed with the idea to make the structure appear even more majestic than it actually would be. All of the columns had been designed to swell in the middle and lean inward just slightly. At the same time, the foundation rose from the center somewhat. My favorite part of the temple had always been the pediments and friezes that went around the entire temple. I most especially enjoyed the intricate sculptures on the east pediment, created by Phidias and two of his students, Agrocreatos and Alcamenes. It was an incredibly complex and lifelike sculpture of the birth of Athena. Nearly all of Olympus was present in the work, and as little as I care for the gods, this one always impressed me. The temple took only 9 seasons to complete. I had the temple dedicated to Athena during the Great Panentheion, a festival that was celebrated all around Greece once every 4 years. Held in the late summer, it was always in honor of our great patron goddess, Athena. When it came time for Gabrielle and I to dismount, we did so and stood on the steps above the Buell Gate. It was over a quarter of a candle mark before the crowd silenced enough for us to speak. I was uncharacteristically nervous as I felt that way. God only knows how Gabrielle was holding up. She refused to let go of my hand, but I suppose it made us look more like newlyweds, endearing us to the people even more. I forgot what I even said when I finally spoke, but whatever it was, it must have been sufficient. For the first time in my memory, I saw noblemen, slaves, and even medics, foreign residents living in Athens, standing side by side and cheering for a like reason. I think that as long as I can exist in this mortal life, I will never completely forget the vociferous sound of that one word shouted over and over again by thousands of cheering Athenians. Lion. To be continued. Well, that concludes episode number 51 of XNU, and that will be chapter 6 and almost half of chapter 7. Of the Conqueror series, Times Fell Hand, by the late L.J. Moss. And once again, congratulations to Becky Summers, the winner of the XNU competition. And I hope everyone enjoyed the show. If anyone has any
movie suggestions or book suggestions for the next episode, please send them in to xena.uber@gmail.com. Same thing for any music suggestions or any dedications you'd like to give out, or if you have any announcements that you'd like to make, or any news out there in the Xenaverse or in the Uberverse, send me an email and I'll be sure to spread it out on our show. Have any suggestions on the show in itself, or just want to say a shout out and see how things are going, send me an email once again at xena.uber@gmail.com. So until the next episode, everyone, take care, enjoy life and love. Bye-bye.